Ladies and gentlemen, please rise for the playing of our national anthem.
Baseball fans, you're listening to Fabes Babes.
Hey, Calls.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
You know what? I just checked the score, and as we all expected, the St. Louis Cardinals are already beating up on the Atlanta Braves. So, you know, better than expected, I guess. How about you?
I'm good. You know, I'm kind of keeping an eye on the Yanks score right now, too. So if you hear any, like, random woos, you'll know something good is happening. They're playing the Detroit Tigers right now, so.
Nice.
Yeah. So welcome, fans, to episode 13. We have so much to cover tonight. I was actually looking at our agenda here ahead of time, and I was just like, oh my gosh, how are we going to get this in?
I know.
There's so much going on in MLB baseball right now. But first, we need to talk about how we have remained loyal to our teams through historically one of the worst seasons both of us have had. And then we'll cover what's going on around the league.
Yeah, sounds like a plan. So we're going to do a little bit of an around the horn segment, which is how we normally kick our episodes off. We're going to try something a little bit different to share a little bit more about ourselves along with our obvious baseball fandom to kick things off. So we're going to do a home run from our week, which will be like a highlight, a strikeout, maybe something that's not going so great or that's bothering us. And we'll share what's on tap, something that we're looking forward to. And this will probably be a mix of, like, you know, it could be a baseball thing. It could be a personal thing. It can be a little bit of both. So, Jonna, would you share your home run with us for this week?
Absolutely. So mine is a very obvious one. It's been in the news a lot that the Yankees called up their baby bombers, our young prospects. And so if you have heard of Jason Dominguez, he's been commonly referred to as the Martian. The Martian has landed. He has homered in two of his first three games, and the Yankees just swept the Astros. So of course, like, I'm on cloud nine after that. And they've now won seven out of their last eight games. So they are making the AL wild card race a little bit more interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. It is weird how many parallels the Cardinals and the Yankees have, and not the same ways that they normally do this year, but maybe unexpectedly as of late, once we had all kind of, like, finally, you know, swallowed our pill and tried to make peace with reality of them not being in the postseason, they started playing better.
I mean, it makes sense to me, though. It's like the pressure's off. Now we just go out there and have fun and, like, see what we can do. Focus on the small wins. And I don't know. I mean, different vibes, too, when they bring up these young guys and they want to see what they can do. And
for sure.
That's just a different vibe. Let's see what the future holds kind of thing.
Yeah, it definitely helps just to have that, like, shot of excitement and energy in the clubhouse. Well, my home run is not Cardinals related, but I did get to see some, like, winning competitive teams play in person just a few days ago. Over the weekend, I went up to Milwaukee because I live just over an hour from American Family Field in Milwaukee, and I got to see the Phillies and the Brewers play. And the game that I went to, they actually had the exact same record going into that game. And obviously they're both very much in the playoff race. So it was just a really exciting competitive game to watch, and the Brewers ended up winning. And since I was at the stadium, that was really fun to see their fan base really riled up and excited, and that stadium packed. And when I'm normally have been there, it is not normally packed. And people in that city don't necessarily seem as involved or as impacted by Major League Baseball as they do in a lot of other cities. And of course, there's been talks of them potentially like moving and all of that. So it was really great to see this awesome stadium that is beautiful, that creates a great experience every time that I've been there, that it was really full with lots of great Brewers fans and a lot of Phillies fans too. And just to see meaningful September baseball was cool for me. So
right,
that was my thought for this week. Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like, you know, the closer it gets to playoff season, the more energy fans have around the game anyway. So
absolutely.
I mean, what a great like game to go to. Was there a highlight of the game for you?
There was a lot of offense. So honestly, the highlight, the highlight might've been in the bottom of the second inning when my husband was like, wait, it's not the fourth inning. And I was like, no, this is like how long games are when there's offense on both sides. We've just been watching way too much Cardinals baseball where there's like no offense to speak of. So
another one, two, three inning.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a longer game. It was an exciting game. It was back and forth for quite a while. So yeah, really just overall, like I went in kind of thinking Aaron Nola started the game for the Phillies. I went in kind of thinking like, okay, he's going to be the player to watch. We could see, you know, a great outing from him. And by the bottom of the second inning, he was getting pretty roughed up. So that wasn't what I saw, but it was a full team win for the Brewers, and it was an exciting game. And that's the best thing that you can ask for as a baseball fan of any team anywhere.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, did you have a strikeout, maybe something that wasn't as exciting this week?
There were a lot of strikeouts, actually, but not even like, I mean, I guess I'll keep it strictly Yankees, but Harrison Bader was placed on waivers. And I know that pain.
Yeah.
That was devastating. And we were all like, what does that even mean? Like, where's he going?
Right. And it's so different.
Yeah. And I was like really hoping nobody would pick him up so he would stay in New York, but obviously I knew he was gonna get picked up right away, so he is off to the Reds. That was a tough pill to swallow for me.
Yeah, it is really weird of all teams seeing him be on the Reds as well. Have you watched any games or any action of his in a Reds uniform yet?
I haven't
either. We're gonna see them pretty soon.
I'm not ready for it, but I'm sure it's even more painful for you being like in your division.
Yeah, it's going to be really strange. I mean, he hasn't been exactly like tearing it up lately, so
yeah,
maybe he won't make it hurt too bad, but with the way things are going for the Cardinals this year, I'm sure it's going to be like Harrison Bader is going to have the series of his life. The Cardinals play the Reds two more times at home and away.
Sure.
And Harrison Bader is probably going to like set records. We might as well keep an eye out for it. So
yeah,
we'll see.
So do they play in St. Louis again?
They do. Yeah, they play them in St. Louis. Actually, that is the final series of the season. So I plan to be there for that last game of the season. Yeah, it definitely will be the last game of the season for the Cardinals. Maybe hopefully not for the Reds, but October 1st, we'll be there. Well, my strikeout this week is, I'm going to share a little bit of a personal one because I feel like a lot of people can probably relate to this, but I know you and I are both here in the Midwest, and the weather has been crazy, as it pretty much always is, but the humidity, the heat, the temperature, like it's all just been back and forth. So I feel like every other day I have like a killer sinus headache. My allergies are insane. And yeah, that's what I want to whine about. That's my strikeout for this week, is that as much as I love this time of year, I'm like ready for it to just pick one season or the other.
Agreed.
And I feel like there's like really never a time in this part of the world where I'm not, you know, hoping for that, because it's just been a lot of back and forth lately.
I'm so ready for fall, but today was a very fall-like day here. It was like 71 degrees, but we had like the worst air quality from the Canadian Tire. So we couldn't even go outside and like walk our dogs. So it was just like, why? What's the point?
Yeah. Ugh. Well, okay. What are you looking forward to? What's on tap for you?
what's on tap is, as I mentioned, the Yankees brought up their baby bombers. So with that, there's a lot to look forward to. They've finally called him up. They're showing a lot of promise. Things are clicking for the team. And I think a lot of us as fans are looking forward now to spring training. Like, I'm not totally wishing away this year, but I'm really excited to see like what they'll do next year now. And I don't know, in personal Babes news, I am very excited that we are going to launch a website and we are going to start writing. So yeah, I'm excited for that. I'm excited for the guests that we have in the queue here at Babes Babes. So next week we'll be talking to Veronica Alvarez, who is the U.S. Women's National Team manager and a five-time player herself. She also coaches in the Oakland A's organization. So I'm very excited to have her. And yeah.
How cool that we did a profile on her in one of our first episodes. And now we get to have her on. And
how like, okay, crazy so is that?
And how we read about you, but now we get to hear it straight from you.
We read off a quick little blurb about you, but no, it's very cool to be in contact with her and I feel really humbled.
Yeah. Yeah. That's going to be awesome. So yeah, that'll be next Thursday. I'm very much looking forward to both of those things that you mentioned as well. But as much as I just complain about the weather and my allergies, September is my favorite month, I think. And I love fall as well. I'm as basic as they come. I'll admit it. I'm proud. I have no shame. I make my own version of a pumpkin spice latte. I shared it on my Twitter. So if you're interested, you can make it at home. It is minimal ingredients. It's not super sweet. It's not super chemically tasting like the one at Starbucks. So yeah, I love the song September by Earth, Wind & Fire. It's one of my favorite songs ever. So I'm just looking forward to enjoying the month of September. And even though that looks different for me in terms of enjoying Cardinal baseball, I'm still going to enjoy it till the very end. And like you said, I'm definitely not wishing even a day of the season away. And the Cardinals are up another 2 runs right now. It's 6-0. So I'm just going to enjoy it. Because again, you never know. Every day.
Martian just hit a home solo home run. So that's his third home run in his first 4 MLB games.
Wow. See, there's always something to watch for. Well, this is like a perfect segue into our main segment today. We, in one of our first episodes, do you remember which episode it was? Maybe like 5 or 6 that we had our friend John Oski on, who is a Cincinnati Reds fan. And it was in like probably early May, when the Cardinals and the Yankees were both not off to the best start. At this point, the Cardinals were like really tragic and the Yankees were just not performing necessarily as might have been expected. But we were already like, whoa, what are we going to do? How do we handle this? We are fans of the two most winningest franchises in all of baseball, and especially in our lifetimes, like that, it has just been what we've come to expect. So we invited John on and we asked him, like, in your lifetime, the Reds, you know, have rarely ever gotten to the playoffs, but you're so invested. You stay excited. How do you stay excited? How do you be a good baseball fan? And ironically enough, man, we'll have to invite John on back soon because his team is now the one that's still in the playoff race. And I'm super happy for him because Reds fans absolutely deserve it. And the Reds are a really, really fun storyline this season. But what we want to talk about a little bit, because we know we have a lot of Yankees fans and Cardinals fans that join us and listen in, is that as the two most winning franchises in Major League Baseball are, for all practical purposes, out of playoff contention, even before Labor Day this year, how are we dealing? How are we staying invested? So the first question that I have for you tonight, Jonna, is what have you learned about how to be a fan of your team, even when they're not at the top of their game and they're not super competitive this year?
I mean, it's funny because I really took to heart what John had to say. Like, he gave great advice. He talked about, you know, paying attention to the prospects and the things that you have to look forward to. For me, like, oh my gosh, there have been so many ups and downs, but I think, you know, by nature, you just kind of have to start taking it one game at a time and focusing on those small wins, like the prospects that get brought up. I gained a huge amount of respect for the people in the media world. And I've learned that it is not easy to cover a team when they have their downs. And you had Katie Wu on your podcast who talked about the same thing. And so, you know, I'm still like navigating those waters and trying to figure out how to still cover the Yankees through those very, very, very lows. But they've had a lot of small wins recently, and, you know, players have reached milestones that are huge. So there's been a lot of that to cover lately, which has been good. I don't know. It's really hard. And at this juncture, I was actually doing a little research, like poking around online, trying to figure out like, well, what do they do? You know? And I found this quote and I really want to read it. It's, "In the end, team loyalty has a spiritual dimension as much tied to the dream of who we are and can be, as well as the dream of our connection to our home. Often those hopes get crushed or deferred, but every now and then a glorious moment occurs when it comes so close to the dream's ideal as to renew faith and commitment when verging on losing its heart. Like friendship or marriage, loyalty to a team obligates a person to stay through good and bad. We reserve the right to criticize and quit and leave, but return. I can turn off games in disgust and vow never to care again, but I know, even if the team does not, that I will eventually cave and return. Team loyalty is not a one-season stand. Team loyalty elicits loyalty and commitment for good and bad. Supporting a losing team reminds me of Pascal's secret, the heart has reasons the mind does not understand." And I just thought that was like the best, I don't know, summation I could ever possibly come up with.
Yeah, that is really beautiful. And one of the things that I loved about talking to John, I don't think he said this on our podcast, but he had told me before, like, even if my team, you know, has a losing record and has no chance of getting into the playoffs, I still get to see my team win like at least 60 times a year. And that's something that I've really taken to heart this year. And it's so funny that you said, like, take it one game at a time, because that's quite literally the first thing that I have written on my list is to take it one game at a time and like just appreciate each of the 162 for what they are and what they have to offer. And the thing about both of our teams is they still have really incredible players who are making highlights every single game. So it's kind of made me stop in my tracks and appreciate the everyday highlights a little bit more. And that even when, you know, we might be down 13-2, but Tommy Edman is still out there like diving for his life to make a run saving catch. And it's also made me more invested in the farm system. And like you were talking about, kind of keeping an eye on players who might be coming up through the system, players to get excited about in the future, and just learning a little bit more about the organization as a whole and keeping an eye on that for other teams as well. So that's been something that for me, it really kind of forced me to take a step back to ultimately take a step forward into, you know, what there is to look forward to and just kind of learning more about the game as a whole and the inner workings of it. And then of course, there's always those individual player stats and successes to watch. So whether it's the players on your team, because there are still some players on both of our teams that are having really incredible years. I mean, Gerrit Cole, hello. I feel like he would be getting so much more sound around the season that he's having if the Yankees were playing better. And even Jordan Walker and being like the exciting prospect in his major league debut season for the Cardinals has not necessarily had that excitement around him. And I do think it is, you know, as much for the fact that the team is not in the headlines as much. And, you know, we're not going to see them play in the playoffs.
Yeah.
So you kind of talked about this already, but what are you enjoying in this last month? What are you most looking forward to continuing to watch the Yankees for in the last month of the season here?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, they've had a lot of small wins recently. So again, they've won 7 out of their last 8 games. And although that's not like hugely promising, I mean, 7.5 games out is not impossible. So you're telling me there's a chance.
Crazier things have happened.
Aaron Judge became the fastest player in MLB history to hit 250 home runs. Yeah. So that was phenomenal. That happened within the last week. Last night, Giancarlo Stanton became the 4th fastest player in MLB history behind Mark McGwire, Babe Ruth, and A-Rod to hit the 400 home run mark.
Yeah, pretty good company.
Yeah, great company, right? And even though he only has 22 home runs this year, like that actually makes it even more phenomenal that he's reached that. He's the 4th fastest to reach that.
Yeah. Yeah, he's been injured a lot. It's not like I'd be interested to see how many games he's played in versus those players too.
That's a good point. Awesome. Yeah. Yeah. Jason Dominguez, he was called up in Harrison Bader's stead, became the youngest player in Yankees history to homer in his first big league at bat. And I might add, it was against 3-time Cy Young awardee Jason Verlander. So,
oh yeah.
And it just makes it even better because the Astros fans love to call Verlander the Yankees daddy. So
yeah.
They actually even put a poll out a couple nights before on their broadcast against I don't remember who they were playing. It was a different broadcast team, or it was a different game. They were broadcasting, they did a poll, and they were like, who on the Astros roster is the most like daddy to different teams or whatever. And it was Verlander to the Yankees. Like, I don't remember, Kyle Tucker to the Red Sox. I don't remember the other one. They were like, because Altuve is already for sure the Yankees daddy. And I was just like, okay, I'm going to remember that you guys put this poll out. And for a shit, I did. So then that night when we beat them and I think Stanton, Judge, and Dominguez, and maybe, or DJ LeMahieu, they all homered in that game. So it was awesome because it was like against Verlander too. So anyway, just, you know, a lot of small, like fun ones like that. Anthony Volpe, our rookie shortstop, became the first rookie in Yankees history to have at least 20 home runs and 20 stolen bases. So those wins, like, those have been great.
Yeah,
there's a lot to look forward to. Like, it's promising, and I don't know, you celebrate it in the moment, and then there's like something else happening in the next game. So.
Exactly. Well, and no matter how bad they've been playing, like there's always the game tomorrow. And to your point of them sweeping the Astros and performing well against Verlander, and the same way that the Cardinals are apparently owning the Braves this series, which we all totally anticipated, you just never know. And that's like what we love about baseball. So there's always a reason to stick with it and keep watching. I know that me and my Cardinals fans we were really excited for the call-up of our top prospect, Mason Winn, who is a superstar shortstop. He is absolutely the shortstop of the Cardinals' future. And it's been really exciting to see his stellar defense already and just watch him work through getting more comfortable at the plate. And it's awesome that he has the opportunity to do that through the last 40 or so games of this season. And, I just think that's such a competitive advantage for him specifically as a player coming into next season. And to kind of go along with that, I'm loving watching my guy, Nolan Gorman, who I predicted to have a breakout season, really continuing to have a breakout season. And right back to that point of Mason Winn getting to come in at the end of the season, like, I think that just sets him up to be able to do that the way that people get like so worked up when these prospects come up and they don't immediately just like become the biggest superstar ever. Like, that was Nolan Gorman last year. And it's like, well, there's an adjustment period and there's many levels to that adjustment period. And he had to make it at the major league level when the Cardinals were very much in contention all of last season. So I'm glad to see all of his work coming to fruition and him getting some more positive attention this season. And then, of course, the same way that the Yankees players have Giancarlo Stanton and Aaron Judge and players that are always going to be creating those highlight reels, we have Nolan Arenado and Paul Goldschmidt, and I'm sorry, but they are worth the price of admission any day and every way. So totally. I'm still tuning in.
And the following like travels all over the country for those guys. Like it exactly. doesn't matter where they are. Like fans are going to come out and show out. And, but that's an excellent point that it, that's the beauty of having kind of a losing season is that those prospects do get to come up and, you know, get, they get that experience. And the Yankees are notorious for obviously not bringing guys up when they're younger. They love to just like hold on to them until they're like older and it just doesn't work out for them. So this is a really, it's been a really good, like, you know, that's the golden, I think that's the good side of it.
The silver lining. Yeah. I mean, yeah, they are definitely, the Yankees are having to kind of push the envelope and get out of their comfort zone in that way. And the Cardinals are, I hate to say that like this kind of had to happen in order for the organization to take things to the next level and the level that like we really want them to be at. Cause for the last like 3 to 5 years, I would say like there is a difference between a playoff team and like a team that's like decent, but not a playoff team. And in all honesty, like the Cardinals have always been for the last 3 to 5 years, I would say like a decent team, but not one that you necessarily, even as a diehard fan, expect to be the most competitive in the postseason, but they get in because of the disparity in the National League Central from the other divisions. And they just gotten away with a lot. So there, it kind of had to happen here where the same way with the Yankees, their hand being forced to bring up these younger guys and kind of change their approach there. It might've needed to happen with the Cardinals for us to ultimately get the payroll to the next level and to force the hand of the front office here to step up their game. So
yeah,
it's always good to look at it from the glass half full perspective. Okay, we talked a lot about the Cardinals and the Yankees because that's what we love. And we wanted to make sure that we got the message out that we have not quit on our teams and we are still fully in it, fully dedicated. That beautiful quote said it perfectly. But tell me, what teams or players maybe are you looking forward to watching in the playoff race and hopefully into the postseason?
Yeah, I mean, actually to segue from what we were just talking about, which is our teams are being forced to call upon these younger guys. When you look around the league, those are the teams who are succeeding. Those are the teams that are going the distance right now, right? The Orioles, the Rays, like, you know, those are the teams who called up their younger guys, the Dodgers earlier in the season. So obviously the Mariners for me have been so fun to watch and follow. I'm really excited about all the young kids and across the league, right? J-Rod, Elias Diaz, Gunnar Henderson, Adley Rutschman. So I'm really looking forward to these younger teams and seeing like how they match up when it comes to how they do during post, because that's an entirely different ballgame, right?
Yeah.
Like the mindset, everything is different. Clean slate, like that's, I'm really excited. But obviously the Braves team, they're out of this world. They have 4 players this year with 30 or more home runs. Like that's insane.
And they've all played in almost every game this season too.
Yeah,
that's more insane.
That too. Like I'm so impressed with that. So that they're crazy. They're out of this world. But Trey Turner, I have my eye on too. He's been on an absolute tear lately, and Mookie's been on a tear. And I don't know. I don't know if there's anyone I'm not looking forward to seeing in the postseason, to be honest.
Yeah, that's the thing. And there's so many exciting players to watch. Elliot in the chat makes a great point with Adley Rutschman. Like, he is just Major League Baseball's sweetheart, I think. So, again, like, whatever team he's playing for, it's even more awesome that he's playing for the Orioles and they have a great storyline to follow. And yeah, Elliot said again here about Arias, who's a Marlin. The team that I'm like really hoping gets in to the postseason is the Marlins. And I love Luis Arias. I love how he is kind of changing the narrative around what is important in terms of being a star player. Like he's just a different kind of star player, having that super high batting average and on-base percentage and not being, you know, a power hitter, but still getting all of the attention for the obvious insane contributions that, you know, he makes to that team, and specifically the offense, which is something that they've struggled with for a number of seasons here.
Yeah.
And
I think really they're consistent. He's their consistency, I think.
Oh, yeah. You know, for sure. And I mean, at the top of that lineup, when I remember the first time the Cardinals and the Marlins met this season, and I was like, oh, you have to face Luis Urias and Jorge Soler 1-2 in their lineup. Like, no wonder they're in playoff contention.
Right.
And obviously, we love Kim Ng. We've talked about her a lot. Mm-hmm. And this is really I think this is her third year in her position as general manager to where, like, starting to see the fruits of her labor. We've got Skip Schumacher, who I'm still like all in on, National League Manager of the Year, former Cardinal, who we know and love. And then John Jay is on their coaching staff as well. He's a former Cardinal. I love Jorge Soler. Jazz Chisholm is super fun to watch. Jake Berger got traded from the White Sox. He was like the player that I love to watch on the White Sox. And now he's just hitting all the home runs and having all the burgers named after him in Miami, which I absolutely love. And
he has been a real headliner lately.
I'm so glad that he got traded, and specifically to that team, because I already am like pretty high on that team. But I'm so glad he got traded, because I went to the White Sox game when they played the Cardinals right before the All-Star break. And I just remember being like, I don't know why, but like, his vibes are immaculate and it does not fit in with this organization right now. Like, so I'm really glad that, you know, he's in a completely different place than he was a couple months ago. And I think he is Miami Marlins vibes all the way. And I'm excited to see him there. I'm just going to say it. I'm like, not mad to see the Brewers doing well. Like, if the Cardinals are not going to win the Central Division, like, I would pick the Brewers to do it over any of the other teams. They're organization, I think, is relatively well run. I'm a huge Craig Council fan. I just am. I'm going to say it because, again, I feel like I can admit it a little bit now. But I just think he's a great leader. And there's a reason why he has the most wins as a manager in that organization. And they're hopefully going to extend him and keep him on. But I hope for that city to just like get more exposure and excitement and continue to fill the stadium, because they really do deliver what I would consider an elite ballpark experience up there. And I love seeing that stadium full this past weekend. I like the Phillies players. You know, you talked about Trey Turner. I think Bryce Harper is so damn cool. I just think he's so cool. Like, I'm sorry. I am a baseball fan, and Bryce Harper is so cool.
I'm a Cave Swarb fan myself. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, like Trey Turner, well, I really boosted him up at the beginning of the season. I really thought, like, after the World Baseball Classic, I thought he's going to destroy the league this year. And for some reason, like, he did in the World Baseball Cup, but it just like turned off when the season started. So it's really cool to see him like turning that around and getting hot at the right time, so to speak.
Yeah, and that's what Big Dave here in the chat mentions, that the Mariners had an inconsistent start to their season, but they're peaking at the right time. And when it comes right down to it, like, that's all that matters. And kind of on the other end of that, how do you feel about the Rangers? They are like out of playoff contention for the first time since early April. Do you think they're going to get in?
Obviously, I hate that because it means the Astros are leading. So I don't know. I mean, I know they play each other again one more time before the end of the season. So that could, who knows? Like, who knows what can happen in 30 days, right?
Yeah, right now Verlander is beating Scherzer. It's Astros 3, Rangers 1 as we speak. So
cue the explosives.
Yeah.
From me. But on the topic of the Rangers, I have to give a quick little Jack Flaherty shout out.
Tell us what you heard about Jay Flaherty.
So I was telling Kelsey, I was telling you before this that I just read, like, literally an hour ago, I read a story on him. He was adopted when he was 3 weeks old. His mom that raised him, single mom, and he must have just had one younger brother. I can't confirm that for sure, but he did have a younger brother. he wanted to quit baseball when he was a freshman in high school. And his mom said, like, that's fine. You can quit, but then you need to explain to your brother that it's okay to, or it's okay to quit things when they get hard. So the next day he went, he practiced, right? And now he's pitching, like, it's just crazy.
Yeah, that he had that.
Now, like, he's made it into the big leagues. And it's just, it's a beautiful, like, full circle story. And
Mama Flaherty is one of my mom. Yeah, she's one of my favorite Twitter follows. If you don't follow Eileen Flaherty on Twitter, look her up. She's a gem. She is a badass. So, yeah, and she's his number one fan. And that's cool that he shared that, like, tough love moment really early on. Ugh, amazing. Yeah. Do you have a way that you, like, pick which team you're going to root for in the playoffs? I know we just kind of gave some insight to who we're hoping to see play, but I know there's some people who are like, okay, well, if the Cardinal, you know, if the Cardinals don't make it, I'm going to root for whoever won the Central Division. But then there's other people who are like, I could never root for, you know, one of our rivals. How do you pick who you're going to root for? Is it always the same, or do you kind of just take it season by season?
No, not at all. It probably changes every year. It depends, because I can root in division if they're playing the Astros in the ALCS, right?
Yeah.
But I don't tend to go with, like, interdivision, but that's probably because usually it ends up being the Rays or the Blue Jays, right? And
yeah,
those are the two teams, like, we have the most, like, probably nowadays we have the most tension with those two teams. And so if it's one of them, I'm like, I'm good. This year, though, like, the Orioles, I'm excited for them. They're young. Like, they've gone about things the right way, like, with so much patience. And so to see them, like, it's finally paying off for them. I like them. I think I'll root for them. But it's so tough, right? Because I also love to, like, focus on players.
Yeah.
So it just depends. Like, I'm a huge Mookie Betts fan, so then I might find myself rooting for the Dodgers. Like, I don't know. It's just,
yeah, that is
kind of a wild card. It's just, I don't know.
Yeah, tell us in the chat how you pick, like, who you're going to root for. Do you already know? Elliot's asking who's really going to root for Atlanta. And I agree with that only because here's the thing. People are, like, bored because they've been good for a few seasons in a row.
Yeah, and I'm tired of hearing, like, Osuna and Acuna Jr. And, like, you know, you knew they were going to be good. And those are big names, and they have been for a long time. Ozzie Albies. Like, I'm ready to hear about Adley and Gunnar and, like, J-Rod and all these young guys, you know?
Yeah, I do think that I do think that the Braves deserve a hell of a lot of credit for the way that their organization has put together their team. And I mean, obviously the Yankees have had their dynasty at times. The Cardinals have been very regularly competitive. And so people feel very much about our teams that way of, like, I'm sick of hearing about them. I don't want them to win. So I do have to speak up for Atlanta. Like, I appreciate you. I think it's super impressive what you're doing, but they've been so far ahead all season long that, yeah, I think some of these other narratives are just not more exciting. And, like, I think one of the things that we haven't heard talked about a ton is the way that the balanced schedule is affecting things and how it's going to really affect how everything plays out here in the very end of the season. So it'll be interesting to see if things stay a little bit closer or things change more drastically than they do in the last month of the season typically, because that I would think is probably most likely that things will actually, like, whoever led the division or was in the playoff race at Labor Day, will it be more different than it normally is because of the nature of the balanced schedule? And I could definitely see that happening and storylines of teams like the Rangers and stuff playing out a little bit differently because of the nature of their schedules being so different. So that will be really interesting to see. But I kind of, like you, I am different every season, and probably in each round of the playoffs, so I'll pick up, you know, a little bit more of a following with whoever I'm interested in watching play. but I like go like fully on vibes. I'm like, what team do I just want to see do well and is like firing on all cylinders? And I think you brought up a great point of how interesting it's going to be to see these younger teams like the Orioles, like the Mariners, potentially the Reds, get into the postseason and how they perform that way. Because we know how valuable veterans can be in the postseason and how there's those players like Stanton who just become like he doesn't already look like the Incredible Hulk, but he comes like the Hulk times two in the postseason. You know, who's going to come out that way for these younger teams, and what new postseason stars of the future will be born?
I mean, you never know who's going to get hot. And I like Elliot's point. As a Yankees fan, my disposition is to root for the AL team, but it's not 1977. It's no longer two distinct leagues. And that's true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and the best day is when there's four postseason games on all day. I agree. That's one of my favorite things about the postseason in general, is that you're like, there's a high stakes game on, and you know, it's very rare that you see like a blowout game in the postseason. So there are always games that are
always so really tight. Fun to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pitch.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned at the start that we have a ton to talk about in our Ruth's Rundown segment, just to go over some of the baseball headlines. And obviously, I'm sure we're not going to get to them all because they're still piling up as we speak right now. But we're going to talk about some like not so fun ones first. Tell us what's going on with these jailbirds.
Yeah. So 3 weeks ago, it was leaked by a minor via social media that 22-year-old Wander Franco of the Tampa Bay Rays was having a relationship with that said minor. He was placed on administrative leave. And that means that he's not being paid while the investigation is being played out. So, that happened. And then I guess this week it was announced that a second investigation is taking place, and like the Dominican authorities are involved. So it sounds like a big thing. And I feel bad for these teams when this kind of stuff happens so close to the playoffs. Like,
yeah,
you're really shooting your team in the foot here, bro.
Can you hear yourself talking?
Yeah.
Sorry. I was Googling to see if I had heard at one point that Wander Franco actually is still being paid. And
okay.
I believe that he is, which is not typical of being on the restricted list or whatever. I think he was initially maybe on the restricted list and then he got moved to administrative leave. Anyway, I do remember hearing that there was some exception or agreement made for him that he is still being paid, which is weird. And I guess ultimately we'll see how that plays out. But yeah, it's, I can't imagine being, you know, the leaders of that team, let alone the other players on that team.
Right.
And just having to deal with the ramifications of, yeah, what looks like to be some pretty poor choices. You actually texted me about that before I read the story about it and told me that it happened. And I was like, and when stuff like that comes up, you love to give them the benefit of the doubt and be like, man, maybe you didn't know, but like, I don't think we can do that. And it doesn't come out this way and to this extent.
14. Like, it's not like she's like 17. And so you can like pass for being 18, 19. Like, And I actually haven't even like reposted, reshared any of that crap. Cause I'm just like, this is disgusting. Like, I don't want,
And what's really a bummer about it is that like the thing that's highlighted is how it's affecting baseball and not necessarily
the victim.
Right. And that's, it's scary and it's sad. And in the same vein, we had another big headline that like that come up. Was it just yesterday?
Yes. So Julio Urias, starting pitcher for the Dodgers, was arrested earlier this week and placed on administrative leave for felony domestic violence. And this is not his first incident. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think he is the only one that has had this come up a second time now. And man, I mean, I don't think there's any chance he plays for the Dodgers the rest of the year. And it'll be really interesting to see if any team will touch him with a 10-foot pole. which again, horrible timing for him personally, because he's going to be a free agent. And I think I actually said in our season preview episode that I expected him to be the like front runner to get the largest free agent contract for a pitcher outside of, you know, Otani. And
yeah, I mean, yeah, not looking in the like fantasy draft leagues.
Yeah. Well, in other maybe not as sketchy news, but still kind of sketchy and not great, the Chicago White Sox fired their tenured front office of the GM and the president, and they have since hired their the director of their farm system. They named Chris Getz as their new GM. And what's really interesting about this specifically is that they hired him without holding interviews. And I think a lot of people were like, wait, what? That's not allowed, right? It is allowed, and they had to get approval from Major League Baseball, but there's specific stipulations of like why it is allowed and actually who the opening for Chris's position will then be eligible for and all of that kind of stuff. So there's definitely some specific stipulations around it so that hopefully, you know, minorities and underrepresented people will still have to be considered for other spots within the leadership of that team. And the White Sox have a pretty good track record with minorities being represented in their front office and on their coaching staff. So that's not necessarily, I think, the biggest issue that people might have with it. I have read a lot that Ken Rosenthal has put out specifically for The Athletic. So if you're interested in reading more about this, he has put out some great stuff there through The Athletic, and it's definitely worth subscribing to and checking out. But I just think it's so interesting. They didn't take it even as an opportunity with everything that is going on in that organization over even just the last couple of years to not step outside and, you know, not have sham interviews, but talk with some people who have the best insight and, you know, a different insight and just kind of take it as a learning opportunity and consider their options. So I don't think that was the best look. And that's the side of it that I will be critical on. Seems like a little bit of a coup. Like they just, Chris Getz and Jerry Reinsdorf were planning.
Inspiring.
Yeah.
It really does. Yeah.
To me. So I don't know. Okay. We got one more kind of bummer thing to talk about before we get into the highlights, the happy highlights. Shohei Ohtani, as I'm sure you've heard by now as a baseball fan, he has a torn UCL again. He had Tommy John surgery years ago. And so we'll wait to see if he actually needs to have a second Tommy John. He reportedly tore his UCL for the second time on August 23rd when he was pitching against the Reds, and he will not pitch for the remainder of the season, but he is continuing to hit, which is kind of interesting. I think it's an interesting choice to not just like for him to not take himself off the field, but hey, at least we still get to watch him. Right. Yeah. I'm like, all right, well, at least we still get to watch him, but I'm not sure, you know, if I was his agent that I would give him that advice. Regardless, his agent did speak to the media yesterday and said that he will, first of all, he will be in the lineup for some team next year. So he is going to make his way back to hitting, and that he does ultimately plan to return as a two-way player. So they're still very much going to sell him that way in the offseason. Jonna, do you have any bold predictions of where you think Shohei Ohtani is going to play next year or where you would like to see him?
I wouldn't like to see him go there, but I feel very strongly that it's going to be the Dodgers.
Yeah, it definitely makes a lot of sense. I have kind of a hot take feeling that he's going to stay with the Angels. And
really?
Yeah, I don't know. I have a feeling about it. I don't think it's the most logical thing, but it's just what my spidey senses are telling me. So we'll see.
Okay. Well, I feel like part of the reason he's playing out the season as a DH is to like bring in more and more offers, like to keep the offers coming and like keep them higher and higher. Like, yeah. Oh, Elliot thinks he's going to stay with the Angels too. Huh. Okay.
You're Elliot, you and me. I hear you. I don't know.
It's just like a vibe that you have. Like, or
I just think that they will do anything and everything to keep him. And I think he probably, there are reasons why I could see that he would want to stay there as well. So
And then what? You think they'll just like build a team around him? Because
I mean, shouldn't they have done that already? I don't know. I don't know. But we shall see. Especially because he may not sign a long deal. Like, you know, we had anticipated him getting 10 years, like $800 million. But because of his status now, I think that could look different. And it might just be in his initial best interest to sign a shorter term deal. And it really just kind of depends if he wants to almost bet on himself again, but right. And what kind of offers there are. I think there's still so much excitement around him. And you're right. Like that's probably why it makes the most sense for him to keep showing up in the lineup and proving that regardless of what is going on with his elbow, that it's not going to affect him at the plate and that can keep his value up as well.
Yeah. So.
Okay, now we get to get into the happy stuff, the congratulatory stuff, the history-making stuff, which we all love. You may have heard that Braves superstar and favorite for MVP in the National League, Ronald Acuña Jr., got married and made some pretty serious history all in the same week. So Acuña and his fiance Maria, a longtime girlfriend, they were married in a very intimate ceremony in a chapel west of LA when the Braves were in town to play the Dodgers last week. They'd actually gotten engaged in January, but they pushed up the date of their wedding due to Maria's terms of her visa. And Acuña wanted to make sure that her and their children could stick around for the rest of the very exciting baseball season that the Braves are having, of course. So they just decided to get married, take care of the visa issue. And per reports from ESPN, the wedding came together in less than 24 hours after Acuña asked his business manager to find a venue in the Los Angeles area so that they could get married during this season or during that series while they were in LA. And then that night, guess he's, you know, feeling that husband strength. He hits a grand slam off of the Dodgers starter Lance Lynn. And that was his 30th home run of the season. Earlier that week, he had stolen his 60th base of the season. So with that grand slam, he became the first player in Major League Baseball history to hit 30 home runs and steal 60 bases in one season. Incredible. As if he wasn't already making headlines, he just stamped everything you could want to see. The love story with him and his now wife and the love story with him and the Braves continues.
I mean, the best part was that they came out with like those stats before they started leaking like the wedding news. Then,
yeah,
like, it was like maybe that night later on after I'd already shared like his incredible feat. And they were like, yeah, you got married today. And I'm just like, what?
And, like, seems why like that's secondary news, but yeah.
Yeah. So what a wild day for him.
Do you think there's all that talk between him and Mookie for MVP? Who would be your pick if the season ended today?
It has to be Acuña.
Yeah, I think Ronnie Jr. is just doing, even though I guess Betts technically has a higher war.
Yeah.
I think Acuña's probably made the overall impact for his team and that is all the other numbers. Really.
Yeah, when I'm looking at the category breakdowns, it's like, especially with like stolen bases, stuff like that. I mean, it's hard to, I think it's gotta be Acuña Jr. for sure.
Yeah. It's good to have two really exciting and fun guys to watch. And again, there's still plenty of baseball left. So we'll see we had some other big history making things that happened in the last few weeks. What you got?
What do we have here? Jose Altuve last night became the first player in MLB history to hit a home run in four consecutive innings. Like, how is that? And by first player, I mean 1961, so like the extension era.
Yeah.
But how in the world is that even possible? I'm just like.
Well, first of all, that he even got to bat in four innings is like,
and then to even bat, to get four hits, like no, four home runs.
Yeah. How many home runs does he have this season? Do you know?
Like, not that many. Actually,
I don't think he's like
had like 10 before.
Yeah.
Last night, I believe. Let me look here.
Well, I mean, he didn't play for the first couple months or whatever, but right. he's not the first guy you would think of to do that necessarily, which I think is the other cool thing about that. You know, he's not like a home run derby guy.
Yeah, no.
I think he's like my height. I think he's like 5'6" or 5'7".
Have you seen the pictures of him next to Aaron Judge? I mean, anyone next to Aaron Judge. No. But it's so funny. I'm literally like on the third page of Home Run Leaders and I can't even.
So, yeah. So he's not on there.
Yeah.
Not close to the top. Well, somebody who is maybe a little bit closer to the top, Julio Rodriguez, who you talked about before about being excited to watch him in the playoffs. He became the first player in Major League Baseball history to reach 25 or more home runs and 25 plus stolen bases in his first two seasons. I think what surprised me the most about reading that was like, oh, this is only his second season. Like, he's just already made such an impact and such a name for himself. I forget how incredibly young he is. And then he's only in his second major league season. He's amazing.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Because he's made such a big name and a big statement both years. I mean, both years he participated in the Home Run Derby. Like, who does that in your rookie season and second season? He's incredible. And yeah, I'm pumped for him.
Well, you put something on here about the Cubs, which I don't really want to talk about, but I guess if you want to tell
them. Appreciate it. So this is.
They did something, I guess.
Kim Bird will appreciate it.
Kim Bird, this is for you.
The Cubs have played in 21 games this year where they have scored 10 or more runs, and that's the first time they've done that since 1936. So I was watching the game the other day, and I saw that, like, stat pop up, and I was like, holy crap. Like, I have a lot of Cubs friends, so.
There might be less than 21 people living who were around for that game in 1936. Not really, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. Certainly not that will they have their wits to remember it.
Yeah. If you're out there and you remember the last time that the Cubs played this many games and scored 10 plus runs and you were around in 1936, hit us up. Let us know. I will say that the thing I try to take a step back and not be so salty about the Cubs is that, you know, they can have their time because they haven't had a lot of time, but 2016 was not that long ago. So I'm not ready. I'm not ready yet.
That's fair. That's still salty. I mean,
but we're going to get into actually, speaking of the Cubs, to talk a little bit about the wild card races going on right now. So I'm your, you know, National League go-to, and Jonna will fill you in on the excitement in the AL wild card race. I think it is cool that, you know, I think I've like fully accepted these expanded playoffs. Maybe it's just because it is how it is and we can't change it, but I do think it's cool that there's like more excitement around it and more teams. And I think it will very much be down to the wire to see who gets these three wild card spots. So right now in the National League, the Phillies are 5 games up holding that top wild card spot. The Cubs are 3.5 games up in the second wild card spot. And the Reds are in that last wild card spot. They are just a half a game up from the Marlins and the Diamondbacks, though. So,
but hey, don't leave out the Giants either. 2.5 games is like nothing.
Yes. Yes. Very true. So that is super competitive. And the main thing that I noticed when I am catching up on that day after day here is, who would have thought that maybe 3 National League Central teams would be in the playoffs? And who would have thought even more that there'd be 3 National League Central teams in the playoffs and not one of them would be the St. Louis Cardinals? I don't know, but it's happening. It's wild. Again, I really hope the Marlins get in and the Cubs somehow tank and fall out, but I'm not mad about the Phillies. The Reds, I think, are so interesting to watch, and they would probably be the most, like, the wildest wild card in the playoffs, just to see how they handle that and if they can fire all at the right time.
Have you looked at their schedules to just see how that might shake things up?
I have not compared them too much. I do know that the Marlins had a really tough August. And so they've been getting a lot of shit around, you know, not playing as well post All-Star break. But I had just so anticipated that, given their schedule, that I'm certainly not counting them out. And yeah, I mean, the Reds play the Cardinals six times. The Reds actually, I think they play a lot of teams that are under 500 to end the season. So I did see something about that recently, like 17 of their 22 remaining games or something. They're playing teams that are under 500. And so that's interesting to note and say, like, maybe they have the easiest schedule. But again, I think right now, you know, the Cardinals are beating the Braves. Like, I don't know what baseball has in store for us. So
yeah,
all we can do is sit back and watch. And that's what I absolutely love about September baseball. What about the AL wild card race? Is it as close?
It's so painful for me because the way the leagues are set up, right? And the three divisions, it's so frustrating because you've got Minnesota leading the Central Division, which I knew they would, but their record's 73-67. And when you look down into the wild card spots, Tampa Bay, 84 wins. 84-73. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Seattle, 77 wins. Texas, 76. Toronto, 77. Like, there are 1, 2, 3, 4 teams with much better records who are fighting for a wild card spot. And then the Twins is just like a given. Like, that is just, that's my biggest pain and complaint about MLB and the divisions and the way they're set up. So, Tampa Bay, Seattle, and Texas Rangers are now the wild card teams. Tampa Bay 7.5 games up. Seattle's one game up. Texas, Toronto. Let's see. Boston's 4.5 games back, and then the Yankees are 7 games back. So It could get really interesting over there because it's actually getting closer than it was. I mean, obviously, like, the Yankees were at one point this week 8.5 games out. So it's getting more interesting. And, yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens. And I did look ahead to the schedules. The problem is a lot of these teams play each other, so that doesn't really help.
Yeah.
Like, one team's going to get ahead anyway. Like, so for the Yankees, that's the one thing that's, like – that will hurt them, but
right.
Yeah, the Rangers and Astros play each other again. So who knows what'll happen with that division? That could change.
Yeah. Now is the time that even if your team isn't doing well and you're like so frustrated that you want to look away, then yeah, start tuning into some of these other games because they're going to be close and they're already going to be starting to feel that like playoff atmosphere because of how competitive it's going to be. And Elliot brings up an interesting point here. He says, I think one thing should be changed about the wild cards, restructured and expanded so the division winner with the fewest wins doesn't have to play in the wild card round. Now, that's kind of the opposite of what you were saying, because to your point, I mean, the National League doesn't necessarily have that divisional disparity this season, or at least thus far. But like the American League East does always have like multiple teams that just seem to get out ahead of the other divisions. So I agree that makes it complicated, especially with the balanced schedule.
I mean, it could go either way. Like it really could be such a huge disadvantage to the team with the so like on the NL side, right, where everything's like so close, it's almost unfair. Mm-hmm. But on the AL side, like you said, there's such a disparity. I think it's fair.
Mason Wynn hit his first home run. Big game. Thank you for filling in. Oh, that's so exciting. Okay. I have to say, I heard on another podcast, and I'm not going to say which podcast because I actually really love this podcast and these people that do it. But I heard someone say like that the highlight of Mason Wynn's career is going to be like Pete Alonso, you know, Pete Alonso throwing his first hit. Like that's the only reason anyone's ever going to know who he is. And I'm like, you're clearly not in on the baseball times because people are going to know who Mason Wynn is and he's very exciting. So if you don't know about him, look him up. He just hit his first of many major league home runs. That's so exciting.
I love it. And how many games in is he? Do you know?
He just came up on August 19th, I believe. So not too many. This is like his third.
He's not Jason Dominguez. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
No, but.
No, I'm totally clear. That is, no, that's awesome. I love it.
He's not going to be.
But we have to look forward to.
Yeah. Jordan Walker is more of our like Martian hitting baseballs to the moon. So they're going to be a super dynamic duo to keep an eye on. Oh, you wanted to tell us about the Trey Turner feel-good story of the season, because I love this example of a fan base getting behind someone who's struggling.
This is honestly the best story of like one of the best stories of baseball this year. Like for me, especially from the fan perspective, but I didn't know if we should end on this, because this is like, it's a real hit you in the feels, but.
Oh, you want to end on that? Yeah, maybe you're right. So I'll talk about, actually, this is kind of a sad thing, but I hope it's ultimately not a sad thing, because I don't care who you root for. I think we all root for Andrew McCutchen, right?
He's a former Angel sweetheart.
Has killed the Cardinals on every team he's ever been on. And I freaking love him. Love the guy. I was so bummed to hear that he's going to be a walking boot for the next 6 weeks. He has suffered a partial tear in his left Achilles. He initially thought he was fine, but he is not fine. So for all practical purposes, out for the rest of the season. And the biggest bummer, I think, about this is that he is one home run shy of his 300th home run. And there was some speculation that he might not return after this year, but he has expressed great interest in returning to the Pirates in 2024. And if I were them, I would just hand him a blank contract and say, come play as long as you want. You're Andrew McCutchen. So I hope to see him back in 2024, sending all the good vibes your way, Kutch. You're already.
Stan. He was kind of like one of the ones that got away from the Yanks for sure. So.
Okay. All right. Bring us home.
Trey Turner story. Okay, so before going on paternity leave this week, Trey Turner had 5 straight games with a home run. And this is truly like such a miracle, because he had a rough start this season. In the month of July, his batting average was .218. The first week of August, fans decided that instead of booing him like the Yankees fans would have done, they gave him a standing ovation every time he came up to the plate. So he later thanked them by placing billboards around the city of Philly to thank, I think it even said like, thank you, Philly. And it had his picture on it. So up to that point, he had 10 home runs, and we're talking first week of August. He had 10 home runs the entire season. In all of August, he finished with 9 total. So wow. Like up to August, he had 10 total. And just in the month of August, he had 10 total home runs, 26 RBI, or sorry, 9 home runs, 26 RBIs, raised his average from, as I said, it was .218. So he raised it in the month of August to .324. And his average as of September 4th, when he went on paternity leave, was .350. Amazing. So see, fans, what you can do when you just be a good freaking person and like root for your people. It's so painful for me with Yankees. Like, why would you root against them? Why would you not want to show out and show your support? Like, do you really think that's going to make them turn it around? Like, you're just
right.
Joey Gallo is the perfect example of this.
Yeah. I totally agree. I know that there is that mentality, and maybe we've talked about this a bit before, of certain, like a coaching style or even a teaching style is, you know, if I make you mad enough, like if you get mad enough or frustrated enough, if you fail hard enough, like that will be your motivation. And I had a coach like that in my life, and it really, really didn't work for me. Yeah. Just made me really mad in a way that I'm not a mad or angry person, but I like felt like, no, this just makes me sad and angry, and it makes me want to shut down. And I do think a majority of people are probably like that. And especially when you have a player, like, I'm sorry, it really, any major league player, they're playing Major League Baseball. There is a reason why they got the contract they got and why they are where they are at. So yeah, it's fine to express frustration, to question your managerial choices and that kind of stuff. But I think there's a way to do it and still be respectful. And I mean, are a lot of the people who cover the team professionally, you know, writers and hosts do set a great example of that. So I'm sure some organizations do it better than others, but like take a tip from their book, fans, yeah. Because we can all be, yeah, kind and respectful. And I don't think that's any coincidence, especially his first year with a new team. So
pretty, I mean, coming from the city of Philly, that's honestly probably the biggest shock of it all. Is that,
yeah, I'm like,
they act a lot like Yankees fans.
Yeah. Oh yeah. They're brutal.
Yeah. So, well, on that note, Giancarlo Stanton, he has been the victim of lots of booing. So for him to hit his 400th career home run last night, and you know, he got to do he got the standing ovation, he got to do the curtain call. So that was really cool. And I hope that fans will kind of turn the tides there.
Yeah. And I know, like, I am someone who's painfully aware that we live in a world that is based on results, especially in sports and business and all that good stuff. But I think recognizing the human side of it is still really important, like we talked about, because who cares? I could not care less what Urias or Wander Franco do from now on. Like, I have zero attachment to who they are as players, because like that is, you don't get away with being a trash person and then get my respect as a player. So if we look at it, you know, on the other side, Giancarlo Stanton is a stand-up, awesome person. He's been a hell of a leader. If you read or hear some of the stories about his time with the Marlins and how he led through Jose Fernandez's death and all of that, like, he seems like a really amazing guy. And Trey Turner obviously is one of those guys in the clubhouse as well. So treat them the way that they treat their other teammates when they're down and out. And
absolutely. That's
the golden rule, right? Treat others how you want to be treated.
There you go.
What a great way to put a pin on it. Well, we'll treat you how we want to be treated. We'll follow you back if you follow Babes Babes. Jonna, tell them where they can follow us and when we'll be back next.
Yeah, we are on Twitter at Babes Babes Pod. We're on Instagram at Babes Babes Podcast. We're on Facebook now. We're on LinkedIn. So yeah,
look, we're everywhere you want to be.
Yeah.
And we're on YouTube. You might be watching us on YouTube right now. Sure. So.
Yeah. So and Apple, then Spotify.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Apple, Spotify, YouTube, and now we're doing these lives. So that's kind of fun. Thank you all to everyone who tuned in and commented. That makes it so much more fun for us.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot of fun just to get some live interaction here and kind of prompts our conversation as well. And next week, as Jonna mentioned, we're going to be talking with Veronica Alvarez, and that'll be live next Thursday, the 14th at 7 p.m. So you can mark your calendar for that. We'll make sure to put it out on our socials. But thanks so much for joining us, and we will see you next week.